Start without. We'll do everything. Torahway, Northwest London, Erev Shabbos, Chof Tes, Kislev, 3rd of December, Rav Aaron Hirsch Shlita. Where is the original menorah hidden today?
Right, morning at Chanukah. So, in dealing with a topic of such emotive background, it's important, obviously, to sort history from myth. What is true and what is legendary. Because there is obviously a tremendous cheshek, a tremendous desire for the fact that the Klei HaMikdosh should eventually be restored. And the, accompanying that is therefore the general idea that it is in Rome, and at the end of time, it will be restored. There was a meeting in 1996 between the then Israeli Minister of Religious Affairs, Shimon Shitrit, and Pope John Paul II. And he asked the Pope for the cooperation of the Vatican in locating the menorah from the second Beis HaMikdosh. And he indicated to the Pope that research at the University of Florence had pretty much indicated that it is there. And he said, listen, I'm not telling you that it's definitely there, but it would be a goodwill gesture if you would bring it back to us. And the Jerusalem Post reported that witnesses to the conversation testified that there was a tense silence after this request was made. Having said that, there doesn't seem to be any indication whatsoever from the University of Florence that any research was ever made into this area, and definitely not that they came to this conclusion. Now, this story has come out... Florence is in Italy, yes. This story has come out, you know, time and time again. One of the two Israeli chief rabbis in 2004 also brought up the matter. The Israeli president, Moshe Katsav, did so. And there are stories of how, you know, an American rabbi came and was rebuffed, or how going all the way back to post-war, when Rabbi Herzog Zatzal came to speak to the Pope. That part is definitely historically accurate, because he came to ask on behalf of children, Jewish children, that had been placed in orphanages all over Europe during the war. He asked for the Pope to issue a directive that all of these children should be re-released to Jews if they were relatives of those children, the Chalapachas. But apparently added to this is the idea that the Pope actually showed Rav Herzog the menorah, but refused to give it to him. All of these are in the category of legend or wishful thinking.
What year was that?
That would have been in 46. Now,
was it a gold menorah or a wooden menorah?
Well, we'll get there, but definitely the main menorah used in the Beis HaMikdosh was a gold one.
Yes. The first one.
Well, it depends how you mean the first one. Are we talking about the first Beis HaMikdosh, second Beis HaMikdosh, pre-Chanukah, post-Chanukah? Let's leave questions to the side for the moment. Okay, so the best-known evidence for the menorah is obviously the Arch of Titus in Rome, which is seen in the carving. On the inside of the arch, you have a procession coming down to Rome, which we'll come to in a moment. This is a procession that is actually recorded in detail, in historic detail. And you have here the Shulchan at the very beginning.
you have here the menorah, and slightly off-site you have other clay mikdash as well. And these are being brought to Rome and caught for posterity on this arch, which nowadays is, you know, you have to pay to get to the arch. It's part of the tour of the Senate and the Forum. You can't get there outside of hours. And there is the famous incident with Aponovich Rov, who came there and with Dr. Moshe Rothschild and said, you know, where are you? Where is the Roman once mighty empire? And where are we, who were supposed to have disappeared into history? And therefore, for many people, this is, first of all, an enduring symbol of what Rome did to Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, and also of the fact that, you know, we've overcome it and we've survived and we are still around to tell the story. Now, having said that, this arch was not the earliest evidence. That comes from Josephus. Josephus is a mixed bag. He was originally not only Jewish, but a Jewish general. And he was involved in the early rebellion against the Romans while the second Beis HaMikdash still stood. We're talking a number of decades before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And at one stage in the north of Eretz Yisrael, when they were surrounded eventually, he gave himself over to the Romans, not just literally by surrendering, but he actually, having been an historian on behalf of the Jewish people, now became an historian on behalf of the Romans. And therefore, some of the things he says have to be taken with a pinch of salt. But having said that, Rashi quotes Josephus on a number of occasions, and in many of the things that he writes where he does not have a bias or a political agenda, or does not have to curry favour with his new taskmasters, so to speak, in Rome, in the areas where he's not driven to write from a particular point of view, where he is objective, we definitely accept what he wrote. And he was in Rome when the clay HaMikdash were brought at the end of the siege against Yerushalayim in around the year 70 CE. And he describes this procession. The spoils in general were borne in heaps. Conspicuous above all were those captured at the Beis HaMikdash temple in Yerushalayim. These consisted of the shulchan, which was very heavy, gold, a menorah, likewise made of gold, and after these was carried a copy of the Jewish law, by which we assume it means a Sefer Torah. And then there was a large group of people, including Shimon bar Giura, one of the leaders of the rebels in Yerushalayim, who was executed in Rome on that day. And behind them was Vespasian, the original individual who had raised the siege against Yerushalayim, followed by Titus, son of Vespasian, while Domitian, the younger brother of Titus, who would eventually take over from him, rode beside them. And the itself was a sight, the entire machazeh. And there's no reason to doubt the accuracy of these descriptions. And it, therefore, is clear that these kelim were brought to Rome. As a result of them having had a very difficult siege, they built the arch. The very fact that there is an arch of Titus in Rome, depicting the destruction, the downfall of Yerushalayim, tells you that it was a very difficult siege. In fact, in order to pull it off, they had to have three legions in Eretz Yisrael, one of whom they brought all the way from England. it's a 2,000-mile schlep, because it was a particularly difficult, particularly arduous battle, and therefore they commemorated it in the arch. But more than that, once they had these Kalei HaMikdosh, they put them on display. They built what is called the Temple of Peace, which was completed by the year 75 CE, and nowadays, of course, is basically a ruin. It's part of the tour, once again, if you go through this this area of the Senate and the Forum. But nowadays, all you have is a few columns. There is an artist's rendition of what it would have looked like in its heyday. And this was public property, meaning it could be accessed by anybody who came to Rome. And it was definitely there until almost the end of the 2nd century, until 191 CE. Now, that date, or that approximate date, is particularly significant because that's the end of the era of the Mishnah. Right? The Mishnah was written by around 190 CE. So what we mean is that during the period of Tanoim, during the period of Rabbi Akiva, and Shimon Bar Yochai, and Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Gamliel, these kelim would have been visible to all. And remember that Rome had a large Jewish population, not just post-Churban, when many slaves were brought to Rome and they were involved forcefully in the construction of the Colosseum, and their money was used to finance the building of the Colosseum. But prior to that, if we go back to the year, call it 1 CE, you already have thousands of Jews living in Rome. There was a proper kahila, so to speak, there already. And therefore, there would have been many Yidden who would have seen this Temple of Peace. We know from various places in Chazal that certain Tanoim were in Rome on what you would call official business. Meaning, if they needed to deal with a gezerah, with a decree that was made against the Yidden or against Eretz Yisrael, they would travel to Rome to seek redress or to try and ameliorate matters. And we have various stories with Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel. They're on a ship, Sukkos and the Arbaminim, and you know, who did what and how exactly they made it happen. Why did they travel Sukkos? You know, wait another week until it's not Yom Tov. But they didn't have a choice in the matter because these were matters of urgency. So we find, for instance, that Rabbi Lozar, son of Rabbi Yossi, says, I saw the Peroiches in Rome, and Hoyu Aleo Tipe Dum, there were spots of blood on the Peroiches, which they told me came from the Avodah of Yom Kippur. Also, Rabbi Lozar ben Rabbi Yossi says, I saw the tzitz in Rome. And there is a machlokes in the Gemara at that point between him and the Chachomim as to whether the words Kodesh Lashem are written on two lines, just the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei on one and Kodesh and the Lamed on the second line, or whether it's all written on one line. And Rabbi Lozar ben Rabbi Yossi says, I saw it, is all written on one line. And the Chachomim say it has to be written on two. The Rambam paskens that were we to create one today, it would be indeed written on two lines. Even though historically Rabbi Lozar ben Rabbi Yossi saw it, and it was written on one line. And there is a well-known letter of Rabbi Huttner on this matter, where he explains that what we are dealing with is not archaeology. We are dealing with halacha. And halacha requires, therefore, the proof of how something needs to be made using all the logic and svara of Gemara that we normally apply. And if we come to a different conclusion to the one that we believe was historically accurate, since the Chachomim are the majority, we will follow that. So he sees all these kelim.
Excuse me, but the Rambam...
Let's deal with this some other time. It's not central to the topic.
How can you go for care?
Because it's irrelevant. The site of it is irrelevant. What depends, what creates halacha is svara and raya and Chazal. And that is what brings you to the conclusion. As I say, have a look at this letter of Rav Huttner's. I think it's Lamed Aleph or Lamed Beis, and that will give you the full insight. Either way, he is talking about seeing all these kelim. They are not in display, on display in the Temple of Peace. They are in a indoors, not to be seen by the public. But he, presumably, being on a mission to see members of importance within the Roman Senate, was brought to these places for his meeting. That's where he had his audience. However, it also talks about other kelim, the ones which we are more familiar with, ones which featured in the display on Titus's arch, and therefore they are there. So it's pretty likely that they came down to Rome. There's no reason to doubt it. It's pretty likely that they were in Rome until the end of the 2nd century. What happens next? Well, what happens next is a complete silence by any non-Jewish, by any secular view of history. Meaning, there were contemporary historians in Rome. There were other people outside of the of Italy altogether who were not necessarily Roman by identification. They don't talk about Klei HaMikdash at all. Chazal, really, are the only ones who are mentioning the Kelim. And it's interesting here, because for the first time we diverge, or at least we have an insight in Hashkofa or Machshava that is not historical per se. And that is as following. In the first Beis HaMikdash, we know that the Kelim were hidden. Nignozim, the Oroin, so that it shouldn't fall into the hands of the non-Jews of Bovel, and the various kelim that don't reappear in the second Beis HaMikdash are hidden. And they are in Eretz Yisrael, and they will be revealed to us at the time of Bayis Shlishi. Now, whereas that was the fate of kelim in the first Beis HaMikdash, to be hidden but in Eretz Yisrael, the fate of the second Beis HaMikdash and of the kelim of the second Beis HaMikdash is that it was taken from us to Rome in captivity, as we were, and therefore the understanding is that our captors will be forced to return it to us at the time of their downfall, at the end of time. Because this is the power play, so to speak, between Esav and Yaakov. And when Yaakov has the upper hand, as we find in Psukim in Parashas Toldos, then Esav will be forced. So therefore, there is an understanding that the Kelim are waiting for our day, when they will be forced to give it back, which presumably means that there is at least an understanding, perhaps not a source, but an understanding that the menorah is being kept there in abeyance. Now, historically, what then happens is that Rome is sacked by the Vandals and Visigoths in 476 CE. So this is 300 years after we've got any real mention of where it is. And then things basically go dark. First of all, Europe itself enters the Dark Ages. And secondly, in terms of historical traces, we don't know anything. There is a strong likelihood that, unlike the Romans, who valued the menorah not as a keli, but as a proof of victory, the Vandals had no interest in this vessel whatsoever. And therefore there's a strong likelihood that they melted it down and used it for personal aggrandizement, because it was in their financial interest to do so. They're not going to schlep this menorah, which weighs probably 60 kilo. They're not going to schlep it back to wherever they've come from. There is, though, one source, and that is that in the 6th century, there was a recapturing of the menorah by the non-Jews, and it was brought not to Rome, because by then Rome wasn't the capital city of the Roman Empire. It had not been the case since the 4th century, since 312, when Constantine the Great had converted the entire Roman Empire to Christianity. He moved the capital from Rome to Byzantium, the Byzantine period, which then is the next almost 300 years. Byzantium eventually became known by the name Constantinople, and eventually by the name Istanbul, which is its name today. And there is an account of the fact that a Byzantine general, a guy called Belisarius, recaptured this menorah in North Africa from the Vandals and brought it back, and there was a tremendous procession in Byzantium. And an anonymous Jew is supposed to have said to the emperor, it's not a good idea to keep the Kalim here. You know, look at what happened to Rome. Eventually, it would be best for it to be taken to Yerushalayim. And apparently this is what was done, and it was placed in a church there. But this account is not recorded by any other historical sources. So, you know, whether it happened or not, it's possible, but we couldn't say one way or the other because we've got no knowledge of it. In Jewish art and iconography, the menorah is an enduring symbol. If you have a look in the catacombs in Rome where there are Jews buried, you will see Hebrew lettering as well as Greek and Latin at times, and the symbol of the menorah. If you look at mosaic floors of shuls in the north of Eretz Yisrael, which date back to a little bit after this period, the 7th century perhaps, in the mosaics you see the menorah. That is the symbol. So clearly it meant a lot to Klal Yisrael, and it's something that is centrally located as part of our identity. But we still don't have evidence per se. Now, in the second half of the 12th century, there was a Jewish traveller called Binyamin Tudela. And he travelled literally across the whole of Europe, to Eretz Yisrael, to the Middle East, and left a very detailed account of where he went. And at one stage, he went to Rome. And he was told that in the Church of St. John in Rome, there are two copper columns from the first Beis HaMikdash that are called Yochin Uvoyaz. And on Tisha B'Av, the Jews mourn outside of this church over the Churban. And that in the underground cellar or basement of this church are the Klei HaMikdash. But he's not shown any of this. So, you know, maybe, maybe not. Now, in far more recent times, there is a letter that was written by a guy called Rabbi Yonason Stenzel. And he wrote to the papal nuncio, and he said, you know, we would like the menorah back. Now, in Yeshiva University, there was a group of students, and there was a seminar, and in fact a whole element devoted to the Klei HaMikdash. And they then wrote to Shimon Peres, who was at the time the president of the State of Israel. And they wrote as follows. This is in July 3rd, 2014. Dear President Peres, Rabbi Stenzel has received considerable press with his claims that the menorah of the second Beis HaMikdash is being concealed by the Vatican. And he received a response in November of 2013 who requested some level of proof in order for him to facilitate the transmission of this request to people, including the Pope. And he wrote with a list of proofs. But, as they go on to write in their letter to Perez, none of these proofs actually hold up to scrutiny. There are claims made that an individual called Rabbi Yisrael Miller in Yerushalayim, his father, Baruch Miller, saw the menorah in the Vatican while disguising his Jewish identity. So the father, Rabbi Baruch Miller, was no longer alive at that time, and they went to the son, and the son said it wasn't his father, it was a friend of his father, who's also no longer alive, and I'm not sure if they knew who this friend was. So all of it, that's the sort of level that comes out of this discussion, and therefore, clearly from... And I know you'll be very happy to have spent 25 minutes listening to find out in the conclusion that there is no accurate record of any trace of the menorah anywhere, let alone in the Vatican itself. Not to say that it can't be somewhere in there, but we have no trace of it. And round the corner to the actual Vatican is the Library of the Vatican. They have a book which is now in PDF format. It's 800 pages long. That's just the index of all the Svarim that the Vatican has, all of which basically they stole over the years. Kisvei Yad, First Prints, right? Worth, in the tens of millions. Now, you can nowadays get access to it, and you can at least definitely and digitally find all these Svarim, and they will share them with you. But they do have them, so it's not as if they don't have anything that is Jewish that belongs, clearly to us. However, one last thing to discuss, and that is, let's go back to this picture for a moment and have a look at the menorah. Firstly, this menorah here would seem to indicate that Rashi is right and the Rambam is wrong, because the Rambam's halachic ruling in menorah is that the spokes radiate outwards, they are not curved. But there's a far bigger issue with it. And this is something Rav Herzog wrote about in 1956, the base of the menorah. Now, I don't know how clearly you can see it, but it is not three-legged, which is how Rashi depicts the menorah to be, the base it's standing on. And there don't seem to be any cholkim on the matter. It is on a base, and if you look at the base closely, you will see it has serpents and sea monsters engraved around it. It is therefore almost certainly not the base that stood in the Beis HaMikdash. Could it be that for sake of convenience, the Romans simply transported it in a different way, but the main menorah itself is the menorah from the Kodesh, the Heichal? It's possible, but we don't necessarily know. Now, to get back to a point that was raised earlier, which menorah? The Gemara tells us that when the Chashmonaim originally came in, Medrash, that they made one of wood, and then when they had more money, they made it of copper and eventually of gold. So clearly, there was more than one menorah. And even in the first Beis HaMikdash, it is possible that there were other artifacts which were not the ones that were in particular use. In the case of the Shulchan, almost certainly the case. So it could be that it was a menorah, but possibly not the menorah that is being depicted on here. So, all in all, we don't know. We await the restoration of Bayis Shlishi with the creation of the Kelim. Will we have to start from scratch, or will we have them revealed to us, is something that only the end of time will actually tell us about.